In the Canadian justice system, animals' interests are rarely represented, but the lawyers at Animal Justice fight to give them a voice in court and the political system. This is the Paw and Order Podcast, and these are their stories.
Welcome to Paw and Order. I'm your co-host Camille Lapchuk, and I'm joined today by my co-host Peter Sankoff. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Camille. How's it going?
Good. Can you believe this is episode 9 of Paw and Order, the podcast?
Not only can I not believe it, I'm just wondering if we're going to say that after every episode. Can you believe this is episode 10, 11, 12? It just keeps going.
I know. Pretty soon we'll be on episode like 80 and we'll be like, oh my God.
It'll be old hat by then. By then, we'll be bored and we will have nothing left to say. And it's kind of interesting that I say that because to return to a trope that has come up on a past episode, I believe that one of the things we talked about at the beginning was we had this worry and concern that there just wouldn't be enough to talk about every 2 weeks, Camille. Kind of ironic, isn't it?
It's really ironic, especially because this week, our episode is just jam-packed. We actually have a list of like close to 24 things we want to talk about, Peter, because there's just been so much in the news.
Yeah, we have to leave stuff out. We really did. You'll hear soon that our main segment is just, you know, everything that's going on in the news. There's just so much going on right now with respect to animal welfare, animal cruelty, animal law litigation generally. It's very, very exciting time. So we've got such a jam-packed week. It's almost hard to know where to start, Camille.
Yeah, well, why don't we start with what you've been up to, Peter? You were out of town on a trip to BC, I seem to recall.
Yes, I went to BC for a little while. I was in Vancouver, not animal law related, just doing my thing, enjoying the coast, checking out BC's many new vegan restaurants. So that was good fun. Nice to get out to the coast for a little while. And I came back this weekend and we decided it was so beautiful in Edmonton. We got up to 26 degrees that we performed an annual tradition at my house. Camille is well aware of this. The fourth annual Pook and Buddy's lemonade stand for animal justice. This is where my
Pook and Buddy, Peter?
Pook and Buddy are my two children, Penny and Oscar. And for the last 4 years, at least once a summer, sometimes twice, they do a fundraising lemonade and cookie stand where we donate half the proceeds to animal justice and the other half go into my kids' pockets so they can buy something that they want to buy for themselves.
So they can buy more like vegan donuts and things?
Yeah, well, yeah. We buy the vegan donuts. By the way, just as an aside, I have to get this in. Cineholic is opening up this week. Let me just say that for the record. So I'm going to leave the Cineholic discussion to another episode, but I'm very excited about Cineholic. And I should add, I just found out that Edmonton, I literally found this out by accident. Edmonton has a new vegan donut shop. I'm very excited. Because I love vegan donuts. Let me just say for the record, I visited Vancouver's vegan donut shop. Well, sort of vegan donut shop. And it's like, yeah, so this just opened. It's called Big Donut and I haven't been yet. So I can't talk about it, but it looks really good and I'm looking forward to visiting it soon. So yeah. But anyway, the kids lemonade stand was great. We raised $50 for animal justice, which is a lot of cookies and lemonade at $1 a piece. So we were very excited. We had a couple of types of vegan cookies and it was great. My kids really liked it. They liked doing something. And I can tell you this, Camille, I'm breaking secrecy here. Right after the gala, my daughter is turning 9 years old. And she has decided that for her birthday party this year, she is eschewing presents. She has decided that for her birthday present this year, her friends have to bring her a donation to animal justice.
Aww, that's amazing. I just love when kids are so passionate and they really get the issues and they decide to forego the toys and all the things that they're going to outgrow in a few years anyway and actually make a difference with their birthday. That's so sweet.
So Anna, the gauntlet is down. There you go. It's your turn next. You've got enough children. They have birthday parties. That's the way to do it. Donations to animal justice. We're gonna commit our kids to the cause by brainwashing one way or another. No, actually, to be honest, this was totally her suggestion. A friend of hers did something similar, not to animal justice, unfortunately, but she decided it was such a good idea that she wants to do it as well. So that's really exciting.
Well, it's actually kind of a trend right now, people donating their birthdays for a specific cause rather than getting stuff that they don't really need or want anyway. So if any of you guys are listening and are thinking of doing the same, we would totally love to help you set something up and create a special page for you.
Absolutely.
Well, that's cool. So, Peter, I understand that you've also got some pretty cool news that you've been nominated, Peter, as a contender for Canadian Lawyer Magazine's Top 25 Most Influential Lawyers Awards. Woohoo!
That's true. I thought it was a typo. I thought they were going after Peter Spankoff, but as it turned out, it was me. And I'm really honored. It's really nice that someone went out of their way to nominate me. I'm in the criminal human rights advocacy area. And it's exceptionally cool because what I liked most about it was that somebody actually nominated me and spoke about Paw and Order, which is really cool. So we had a Paw and Order fan nominate me and talk about the work I do with Paw and Order along with some of my other work. So really excited, really an honor to be nominated. It's going to be a tough sleigh. There's at least 30 lawyers in my category and only 5 will win. So if I have any chance of winning, it's going to be by virtue of Paw and Order voters, all dozens of you. Get out there and vote for me if you want to get some recognition for this cause. That'd be great.
Yeah, I love this a lot because I think it's really important for the animal law movement to go mainstream and to be there and be present and be visible for the mainstream legal community. And we increasingly are. I mean, you know, when we started doing this stuff, Peter, a long time ago, almost nobody knew what animal law was or spoke about it. But now it's becoming part of the national conversation. So I think it's really great that you're nominated for that reason. And if any of our listeners want to support Peter, you can all vote for him, actually. There's a sort of a survey component to this where people can vote and provide feedback. And then they go on to the next round for final judging. But we're going to post the link in the show notes for this episode. And you can also just visit CanadianLawyerMag.com. And I think there's a link there on the main page where you can find the 25 most influential 2018. So congratulations, Peter.
Thanks very much, Camille. I should also point out that one of our listeners was also nominated, and she is doing animal law in Victoria. In Vancouver. It's Victoria Schroff, so you can look for her as well. She is doing some really good work for animals out in Vancouver, and definitely worth casting a vote her way. And while you're at it, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, you know, if you are going to go there anyway and vote, why don't you throw a few votes to our friends over at the Docket, Michael Spratt and Emily Tammen, who do such amazing work in the criminal law area and have also been big supporters of this podcast. And again, sorry, I have to do this, but my colleague Dino Batos has also been nominated here in my Edmonton law office, and he does such great work that I'd love it if you could throw a vote his way as well. Okay, that's enough about voting, Camille.
It's not enough. If we're going to be doing shoutouts, I have to shout out my BFF, Patricia Lewis, who's a litigator at McCarthy's and is so deserving. So check Patricia out too. Longtime supporter of animal justice. Okay, that's enough.
Oh, fantastic. All right, that's enough. Camille, I know that you are so busy. You hardly have time to do this podcast. I don't know how you're doing it, but you are very busy. I know you've been up to plenty of stuff. Why don't you fill us in?
Yeah, as usual, there's just a million things going on in animal justice, which is awesome and the way I love it. Next week, we've got an exciting court date. So I think last episode, we spoke about how there's this case challenging Ontario's animal protection laws. It's the Bogarts case. And animal justice was granted leave to intervene in that a few weeks ago. The hearing itself is coming up on May 16th. So we're going to be in court that day. We've got our lawyer Arden Beddoes coming in for it. Shout out to Arden for his great work on this case. And Benjamin Oliphant, too, who is his co-counsel. So we're going to be in court making some cool arguments, and I won't say too much more about it now because we'll definitely be doing kind of a more in-depth look at this in a future episode, but watch for news on that. And of course, Peter, the other thing I've been going full force on is organizing the gala, the 10-year anniversary gala that's happening on June 8th. So that's shaping up to be just such a special night. We've got really amazing people already coming. There's a gourmet meal, there's a cocktail reception, there's a rooftop after party, And we're also giving out some really exciting awards to allies and people in politics and public advocacy, in the media, in business. So we'll be announcing more about those soon. But if you want to come to the gala June 8th in Toronto, I highly recommend that you get your ticket as soon as you can, because they're getting close to sold out, and I don't want people to be disappointed. So come join us. Party with me and Peter.
Very excited to be there, Camille. I've decided I won't be on our episode next week, so this is my last episode before. I guess we're having one just the day of the gala. Somehow we're going to coordinate that, Camille. I don't know how we're going to do that, but our one of our next episodes is scheduled to come out just the day of, or the day. It's the day of, correct?
It's the day of, yeah.
I think we'll have to record that one a few days early. But in any event, so that is the next episode. But I will announce right now, I've decided on my donation, Camille. It's going to be $10 for every person who tells me that they listened to me on Paw and Order, and an extra $5 if you confirm that Heroes and Zeros is your favorite segment. But let me stress for the record that if Camille tries to, you know, juice the numbers, I'm going to be quizzing you on parts of the podcast. So if Camille's just trying to get everybody, go ask Peter to get a big donation out of me, well, then, you know, I'm gonna quiz you. So that is going to be my pledge to everybody who reports that they're listening to. So I'm very excited about the gala as well. My family is coming out. Unfortunately, not my kids. A little too late for them. But a lot of friends of mine are coming out. It should be a really good show. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Well, we hope to see you all there. All right. So moving on to some other stuff that's been happening lately, we did a pretty extensive episode on live export recently, and focusing on that Australian whistleblower case where just horrific sheep suffering was exposed on a transport ship taking sheep to the Middle East. So that sparked just a ton of debate in the Australian media and in the public. And Peter, I understand there is a bit of news there.
Yeah, I want to talk briefly about it just because it's so interesting. They've really managed to keep this one going. It's very common for these things to sort of light up, flash out, and then sort of disappear. But I really commend the groups in Australia that are fighting this so hard, because they've started to make this a large political issue in advance of an Australian election that's coming up in the not-too-distant future. What's really impressive is that the debate has changed a little bit. And I'm always sort of cognizant to these discussions changing in terms of tone and scope. And what's most interesting, I think, is that the Australian Labor Party, which is the main party in opposition, so it would be as if the Conservative Party in Canada, has come out with an official platform promising to ban transport in the summer and potentially, possibly put in a ban completely. And I think that's really important, obviously, when you start getting political support from parties that are doing that. But what I also think is more, almost as important, although, you know, not quite as newsworthy or potentially significant to if you're not following the debate closely, is that the various groups are starting to talk about buyouts. And to me, that is the most important part of this discussion. And I think it's something that, you know, casual listeners to animal issues don't really understand and perhaps might even get angry about. You know what I mean by that, Camille?
Yeah, I do. The idea of buyouts is essentially paying people compensation for, in return for them exiting an industry, and in this case, an industry that abuses animals. And the notion behind it is that they've then got some cash to, well, be compensated for the loss of income, but invest into a new business opportunity. So people sometimes don't want, or don't really like the idea, or feel super comfortable with the notion of giving money to people who've been abusive toward animals. But, you know, on the other hand of the equation, you've got a situation where you can entice people to get out of an industry and ultimately save animals from going through that in the future.
And it's not just enticement. Like I've had this argument too with animal activists and advocates in the past. And the reason that I'm a believer in buyouts is like it's definitely hard to appreciate the idea that we're giving money to these people that have been causing great harm to animals. I totally get it. But on the other hand, what we can't forget is most of them are doing so in an environment where the government has, in one way or another, often with subsidies, encouraged them to invest in these areas. And I think what happens is, like, those boats that they're putting these sheep on, you know, they don't really have another purpose. It would cost a lot of money to sell those boats to another thing. Like, there are costs that have been invested. And I'm not convinced that it's totally fair to turn around and say, well, we, the government, have been allowing and indeed encouraging this to take place, right, for years and years and years. And suddenly, because the political wind changes, we are going to pull that away from you. And I believe that buyouts are just an inevitable part of the way most of these major animal industries can be enticed to get out of the argument. You simply buy out them, you buy out their licenses, and off they go. And to be honest, Camille, it's not that much different to what happened in Canada when we're talking about the fisheries, for example. One of the things that took place in the East Coast is, well, one of the ways you end the concern over the fisheries is the government has to buy many of the licenses out.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's been floated as an idea for helping end the seal hunt too. Buy back sealing licenses and give sealers a transition period to invest into new businesses. But I think I personally am fine with the idea of buyouts. What I like about them is that it takes away a disincentive for the government to act. It removes a pressure point. If the industries are lobbying really, really hard against a new animal protection measure, there's a very low chance the government's going to go for it because they never want to do anything that hurts industry. So when you take that away, it just increases the chance that you can get political action.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So we will continue watching what's going on in Australia. This story is not going away. It's really, we look forward to following it just to keep up and let you know where it all ends up. Now, it's not all about sheep. We also have news about cats, Camille.
My favorite. So something really cool happened yesterday. The BC Veterinary Association told its members that they are no longer permitted to declaw cats, which is pretty cool. We talked about this on a past episode, but the Nova Scotia Veterinary Association has already done this. So BC is now the second province in the country to make this really progressive move. And it's interesting, you know, because it's not actually a provincial law. This is not something that the government passed or is promoting, but it's an internal rule that the college that governs all vets is now imposing. So if vets do violate this, they can face investigation and sanctions. So there's definitely an enforcement mechanism that's promising there. But I'm excited about this because I think it helps lay the groundwork for a national ban, which is very much something that we're going to be pushing and promoting and working on in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess cat declawing is a particularly interesting one because, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Camille. I mean, obviously, cat declawing requires a vet. And I guess it's different in that sense from tail docking. So, for example, a veterinary ban on tail docking would have somewhat less impact than cat declawing. Is that fair to say?
I think that's a good point. Yeah, yeah, you're right. People could just go cut the tails off their own dogs if they wanted to, even if vets were banned from it. But this essentially ends the practice. The way that cats' claws are removed, declawing is actually a misnomer. It's really more digital amputation, I think is a better word. It's essentially cutting off the cat's finger at the first knuckle of the joint. And they do that either through a laser or through a very sharp knife. And then they sew up the wound. So, you know, it's not the kind of thing that a person can easily do at home.
No, but unfortunately, what it doesn't stop is what's likely to be an increase in business by Alberta vets along the border if people really want to declaw their cats. I guess that's one of the reasons why we need a national ban.
Yeah, totally. So we'll be promoting that. This is just one of those issues whose time has come.
Absolutely. Well, as we said, it's been a jam-packed news week. And this one is one we've been following for a while. This is a decision coming out of the New York Court of Appeals dealing with a long-running application by the Non-Human Rights Project. Camille, you want to fill us in on what's been going on there?
Yeah, so our friends at the Non-Human Rights Project have a legal strategy in mind where they're seeking a judicial declaration from a court that chimpanzees are persons under the law and that they're entitled to be freed from captivity under this writ known as habeas corpus. And habeas corpus is an ancient writ that lets people who think they've been unlawfully imprisoned go before a judge, and the judge gets to decide if there is a valid reason for imprisoning them. So there have been a number of cases that the Non-Human Rights Project has filed over the years. I think they started close to 5 years ago. It's been quite some time now that they've been at this. And for various reasons, the lower courts have shot down their requests mostly. So there have been various appeals, and this is the latest one. And I think it's the most significant judicial reasoning that they've gotten so far on this case. Do you want to fill people in, Peter?
Yeah, it's a bit technical. So let me be clear. They lost their appeal. So they were appealing, attempting to get leave to appeal to the highest court or one of the higher courts in New York. I apologize. I'm not an expert on U.S. court structures. But they lost. But what I think is important, and it's very reminiscent, Camille, of the discussion we had several weeks back when we were dealing with the decision of the Newfoundland Court of Appeal. You, with animal law, you lose some and you win some. And let's just say that across the board, the Non-Human Rights Project has been losing cases. They haven't been able to convince judges to listen to them. And the judges have essentially excluded them, mostly on procedural grounds, saying, well, these are animals and we don't believe they have rights, so therefore we're going to dismiss your claim. And what's interesting about this decision, although it's a loss, one of the judges felt so strongly about the matter that they decided to write an opinion. And let me just say for the record, what an opinion it is. It's only 7 pages long, but it is a very deep discussion philosophically of whether or not these rights should be extended. And the judge's first sentence, which I'm just going to read to you, says that this judge really feels conflicted about what happened, saying that the inadequacy of the law as a vehicle to address some of our most difficult ethical dilemmas is on display in this matter. By the way, very reminiscent, Camille, of the Lucy the Elephant case, the language used by Justice Fraser in that case.
Definitely. That's exactly what I thought of when I first read this.
The judge goes on to talk about how compelling he finds the claim to be. Really saying, by the way, let me just state, not going too far, like not necessarily accepting it, but definitely deciding that it is, as the judge says, a deep dilemma of ethics and policy that demands our attention. And essentially what happened was the other judges essentially decided this is not something we have to consider. They are not human beings. The writ of habeas corpus should not apply. And this judge goes so far as to say, I am concerned. And I was concerned about the fact that we denied leave in the first place. Of course, I'm trying to find that actual quote right now, and I can't do it as I'm sitting here. Oh, yes, here it is. The judge says, in the interval since we first denied leave in 2015, I have struggled with whether this was the right decision. The issue of whether a human, non-human animal has a fundamental right to liberty protected by the writ of habeas corpus is profound and far-reaching. It speaks to our relationship with all the life around us, and ultimately, we will not be able to ignore it. Very, very powerful decision. And that's really the way things get started in this area, Camille.
Yeah, it's just astounding. And the judge's last line is, while it may be arguable that a chimpanzee is not a person, there is no doubt that it is not merely a thing. Like, that's just an amazing statement from a judge in this case. And, you know, the judge, he goes so far, I mean, he extensively cites all of the Non-Human Rights Project's materials, but he also cites an animal rights philosopher, this man named Tom Regan, who passed away last year, but has been one of the most influential animal rights philosophers. So to see his name cited in a judicial opinion is incredible. So the other cool thing that the judge does here is that he shoots down a couple of the arguments and the decisions that the lower courts made, you know, and obviously this is not an appeal that's going to be eventually heard, but the fact that the judge still goes to the trouble of shooting down these lower decisions that were a roadblock for the Non-Human Rights Project, I think is pretty cool. So first he says about a decision, a lower court said, well, you know, chimpanzees, they can't have rights because they can't have duties. They're not humans and they can't have duties like humans can. And the judge in this case says, yeah, that doesn't really matter. I'm not concerned about that. And the other issue he shoots down is another lower court decision where a judge said that you can't have a writ of habeas corpus because you're not seeking to completely liberate the chimpanzees from their confinement. You're just seeking to take them to a sanctuary, which is a different form of confinement. And again, this judge says, well, that doesn't matter. There's lots of cases where there has been an order of habeas corpus and a person's been removed from one type of confinement into a lesser form. So I think that the Non-Human Rights Project is looking at this and saying, wow, we've just eliminated a couple of procedural roadblocks that have messed with our cases in the past.
Yeah, very powerful. It's really good stuff. And it speaks to, you know, again, what we said a couple of weeks ago, it's one step at a time. And getting through that door and convincing individual judges that these claims need to be assessed carefully. Let's just say, Camille, I look really forward to the decision of the Alberta Court of Appeal in the Lucy case that is still pending right now. I'm very curious to see whether these types of words echo in that chamber and hopefully move things along, because that's how we will get rights for animals. Quite a theme of this show, actually. We're going to do it one step at a time.
One step at a time, and we're making progress every day. It's really exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
Okay, so Switching gears a little bit, there's something that's not a judicial decision, but is still pretty cool that you pointed out to me, Peter. So our friends at the Montreal SPCA, shout out to Elise and Alana and Sophie if you're listening. There's actually a TV show now on the air on a French station called Canal V about their work, about their rescue and investigation and prosecution work. So I checked out the website last night. Have you had the chance to watch any of the episodes?
I have not. It's called SPCA en Action, and I have not yet had a chance to watch the episodes, but I look forward to doing so.
I checked out a couple segments, and they were really sweet. There's one scene where the agents are trying to corral this pot-bellied pig that they need to take in for, I think, medical attention, or maybe they were seizing him. And they're kind of chasing him around the barn with these, like, pieces of cardboard, trying to corral him into a crate, and it's really sweet. There's interviews with their staff, and I love that it gives people a more in-depth a look at the work that these types of facilities do, because they are doing a really important role, and we know the SPCA in Montreal in particular is an excellent organization, so hats off to them for the exposure.
Yeah, I wanted to talk, and I wanted to add something about it, because I've seen shows like this before, and I've seen them in Australia and New Zealand, and they did shows like this too, and what I wanted to point out was, what I didn't like about those shows, as much as it was often this cuteness factor, and it was also about the heroic efforts of the SPCA. And what I find so interesting, this is a quote from Le Devoir, a newspaper out of Montreal that is reporting on the show. And here's what they said. This is a translation. This respectful sobriety does not detract from the sympathy we feel for those dedicated, sometimes somewhat discouraged, helpless agents who are helpless in front of humans who should not own animals. The show also teaches a lot about the SPCA's ability to deal with pet abuse and neglect. So this is a professional documentary series that makes a useful contribution. And that's what really excited me about this show, Camille. It's not just, oh, well, the SPCA is great, they're saving animals, rah, rah, rah. I think this show is really pointing to the very real challenges that the SPCA faces as the prosecutorial agent in Canada. Sorry, the investigative agent, yeah.
Well, I do hope that helps sensitize people to some of the very fundamental problems with the way our laws are structured and written. And the SPCA does face those challenges every day, and I know that agents there and at other agencies are always frustrated by their limitations and by how little they feel like they can do in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. Very exciting. All right, Camille, we got to keep moving. It's a chock full of episode, chock full of goodness. We wanted to talk very briefly, at least, about what's going on in Europe, because just this week, it turns out that the European Union has been pushing for a vote for a global ban on cosmetic animal testing. Camille, can you fill us in?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So this vote actually in this resolution that they passed, it actually comes on the 5th anniversary of the European Union banning cosmetic tests on animals itself, which was a pretty groundbreaking move at the time and is now something that's spreading around the world and other countries are catching on to, including Canada, because there's a bill in the Senate that would do that. So I think this is another one of those ideas whose time has come. Society largely accepts that it's unnecessary and cruel and just awful to be testing cosmetic products on animals. So it's only a matter of time. And I think the EU's vote really provides a lot of momentum in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, the key here is the global ban, because if the EU, such a big market, is able to pass a global ban, and I wonder, Camille, if that ban will then be tested in front of one of the international trade organizations. But clearly, this is a big step forward in terms of changing the practice worldwide, because the problem is not necessarily in Europe. They've already got a ban. The problem is about all the cosmetics that are imported into that zone.
Yeah, and oftentimes companies will shift operations to jurisdictions that don't have such a ban if they want to continue doing those tests. So it really underscores the importance for this type of measure to be in place right around the world, everywhere.
All right, and as our final story of just what's been in the news, before we get to our main segment, which is about, you know, things that have been in the news, everybody's least favorite veterinarian is back in the news in Ontario, Camille. Bad news for all of us.
Dr. Recchi. So Dr. Recchi, you probably recognize his name. He is infamous as the St. Catharines veterinarian who was caught on camera about a year and a half ago viciously abusing animal patients in his care. He was slamming cats and dogs against tables, hitting them with metal objects, choking dogs. It was horrific, and I'm sure you remember this because it was such a big news story, but he was exposed on television by some employees, and the employees were really upset that the abuse had been reported to the College of Veterinarians of Ontario, which sort of regulates the profession. And instead of taking this guy's license away, they slapped him with a short suspension and made him go to some training. So he did that. He was back to practicing. Everyone was extremely upset about this because I think there's a pretty broad agreement that he should not be around animals. And we were all really hopeful that the SPCA and the Crown would file charges against this vet because that would be the only way to get a ban on him having anything to do with animals and the only way to protect future animals from being abused themselves. So finally, those charges were laid about 9 months after the video came out. And everyone was excited. We celebrated. We'd submitted an animal cruelty complaint to authorities in this, so we were really happy it was adhered to. And then what happens, Peter, just a few months later, the Crown decides to withdraw the charges against Dr. Recchi. So all those criminal charges were gone. And with them disappeared the only chance we had to keep him away from animals.
Highly disappointing. It's a terrible case in every sense of the word. Very disappointing. I don't know why the Crown pulled the charges. I have to hope that it's something to do with the legal flaws in the case and not some decision, as I've unfortunately seen too many times in the past, that, well, this guy has suffered enough. The vet decision has dealt with him appropriately, and therefore criminal charges would not be in the public interest in that case. And let me stress, I don't know whether that's the reason, because, of course, the prosecution doesn't explain his decision, but I'm deeply concerned about cases like that, and it worries me that that might be the reason.
Well, I don't know for sure either, but I've heard rumors, and maybe this was reported in some vague terms at the time, that there was a apparent concern over a violation of his charter rights during the investigation related to obtaining some documents from different bodies, perhaps the College of Veterinarians. So I don't really know more than that. I don't really want to speculate. But if we can't get a cruelty conviction in a case where a veterinarian abuses animals on camera, what does this say about our broader system? I think it says something really bad about our ability to effectively prosecute people for these offenses.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's a story we'll be following. It just drives me crazy that someone like this who's hurt vulnerable animals in his care is then permitted to continue to treat animals and have them in his care. And what's so outrageous about it, of course, is, I mean, you'd never imagine this in a situation where a child offender has abused or hurt children in his care and then goes back to doing that same thing. But with animals, the most vulnerable beings who will never be able to speak, report, or discuss any future abuse that this ridiculous doctor is able to enforce against them, it's deeply, deeply troubling that the veterinary community in Ontario didn't go harder on him and that nothing was done after the fact. So we're left to market forces to try and put this guy out of business.
Yeah, and you know, it's really disturbing that according to this article we're reading here that he's back to his practice again. He is seeing patients 6 days a week. He says business is slow, but he expects to be at this for quite some time. So I find that really disturbing. I think anyone who needs veterinary care in the St. Catharines region should probably find a different vet.
Boo.
Boo. All right. Okay, so Peter, why don't we switch gears into our main segment, which is, again, sort of a mishmash of animal cruelty cases making major headlines. It's actually been a pretty fast and furious pace over the last few weeks. It's just been case over case, case after case in the news. And there's sort of a common theme in a way with all of them. They all involve cruelty charges or prosecutions or seizures in some respect. They've all made major headlines. And they all sort of highlight some of the issues that prosecutors and agents face, just some of the procedural problems with trying to protect animals while laying charges and prosecuting.
Yeah, deficiencies. That's what I think the common theme is. We have these five cases, and in each of them, we're seeing the challenges because in a way, Camille, it's fair to say they're all successful-ish. Well, I guess one of them is pending. But it's fair to say that most of them have kind of what we might call successful outcomes. Is that the way we'd say it?
Yeah, I mean, there are cases where charges were actually laid, which is, you know, usually a barrier to getting something done for animals in the first place, is just whether the Crown or the agents are going to lay charges. In these cases, you know, they're pretty much all cases where a prosecution's happening. But there's other issues there that are not effectively protecting animals. Sometimes even there's a conviction, yet there's a problem with maybe a prohibition on owning animals or something further to that effect.
Absolutely. Let's dig into the first one. This is a really exciting, I think, because this one is probably the most positive. It's an exciting sort of idea, and it's being broached by our friends in the U.S., the Animal Legal Defense Fund, who are bringing a lawsuit, and this would be a first. Let's just say it's another precedent-setting case. The idea is to sue a former abuser to recover the costs for the ongoing medical care of Justice, an 8-year-old horse. And Justice was listed as a party to the lawsuit, which, by the way, I expect will be contested by the defendants. But Justice is being represented by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and he will be suing his former owner for the care that is now necessary for him, the special medical care, because of the abuse that he suffered from his owner.
Yeah, this poor horse named Justice, it just breaks my heart, but this woman owned Justice and neglected him over what appears to be a pretty extensive period of time. When he was rescued, he was severely underweight, he was not in good shape at all, his health was very bad, and he also had a pretty serious injury. He had a prolapsed penis due to frostbite, so they had to do surgery on it, and it requires ongoing care, basically, for the rest of his life. Fortunately, he was rescued. His former owner, pled guilty to neglecting him, so there is a guilty plea there. There's a finding of guilt. And now Justice is in the care of a horse sanctuary or perhaps an individual person who is taking care of his needs at this point. So that's good. But the issue, Peter, is that this is not the type of injury that just sort of goes away with time. Unlike gaining back the weight that he lost, this prolapse is going to be an issue for the rest of his life, and it's going to be quite costly for his new owners and caretakers to provide for him.
Yeah, but of course, the difficulty is that when somebody is charged criminally, you know, they only have to pay for damages. First of all, it's hard to get payment for damages anyway. But as part of the criminal law, she pled guilty and she had to pay for his care up to the date in which she had, you know, stopped abusing him. So, but after that, there's no requirement to do that. It's not a civil case. Normally, restitution in criminal cases is for the damage that's been suffered. But of course, it doesn't recognize individual victims like horses because they are not persons before the court. So I think what's going on here is a really exciting development to try and use the civil system, just like anybody else would. Just to give you a common example, it would be like if I was in a car accident and the person was driving dangerously and was charged criminally for that, I would perhaps be able to get some money for the restitution for the damages I suffered against my car. But if I wanted to sue for the long-term damage that I suffered against the person who did it or his insurer, if he had one, I would have to go to the civil courts to do that. And I think that's what's going on here.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this case as well is that it's being brought in Oregon. And Oregon state law actually has a pretty progressive interpretation. There was a court decision on this a year or two ago. But state law recognizes that animals are considered victims for the purposes of animal cruelty statutes and the offenses within them. So Justice is suing as a victim of an offense for negligence based on a violation of that statute that provides for a specific standard of care and prevents people from committing offenses. So I think this is it's a cool case because this is an incremental, reasonable type of change to existing laws that breaks down this idea that animals are just property. It breaks down the idea that they're just objects. And it's the kind of thing that could have a pretty big impact in the future.
Yeah, very creative. It may not go well, as some of these cases don't. That's just the way it is. But I think it's a really exciting type of case, and it's exactly the type of thing that I think the law needs to make change going forward.
Definitely. Okay, so moving back to our own country, the first case we wanted to mention was a case involving a man from Saskatchewan originally. This guy had 70 dogs seized in Saskatchewan and pled guilty.
Terry Baker. Let's call him out, right? Terry Baker. He's not our zero of the month. It was just too hard to fit him in. But Terry Baker, this gentleman from Saskatchewan.
Yeah, and Terry Baker had 70 dogs seized in Saskatchewan. He pled guilty to animal cruelty in relation to those dogs. And then, Peter, guess what? He packed up and moved to British Columbia.
Sorry, Camille, when we say cruelty, we got to be specific. I'm assuming he pleaded guilty to a provincial offense. Is that correct? Not cruelty under the code. Or we don't know that.
It's actually a little unclear to me. I think it's a criminal code offense. So in last December in Saskatchewan, the CBC article that we're reading, it says a provincial court judge gave Terry Baker an unusual set of prohibitions as part of a conditional sentence for a charge of animal cruelty. Now, a conditional sentence is like house arrest, and that's something available under the criminal code. I'm not sure that's available under provincial legislation.
It's strange because later in the article, animal welfare authorities say the case highlights the need for prosecutors to seek criminal code charges so that the consequences follow an offender across provincial boundaries. So I was of the view that this case was a highlight of something we've raised before. The concern, this was in our, we're hearkening back again. Now you can all see why we started with federalism. Hearkening back to the problem of laying provincial offenses because the conditions that are involved in sentencing don't cross provincial boundaries when you're only convicted of a provincial offense.
Yeah, that's right. And this could just be a case of the news article not necessarily understanding what's going on and explaining it well. But that's exactly what happens in so many cases. Guys like Carrie Baker are convicted and then moved to another jurisdiction where some sort of tracking mechanism or prohibition mechanism doesn't apply. And they just open up a puppy mill or whatever breeding operation again and start all over. And that appears to be something like what happened here. So Peter, just a few months after he was last sentenced, he's now in a new province, and this time he had 46 dogs seized from him by the BCSPCA.
Yeah. And again, my guess, just going deeper into this, I don't want to beat this horse. Sorry, bad pun, bad expression to death. But it seems to me it would have to be provincial. And I say that because otherwise, as soon as he was in possession of animals, the BCSPCA would be able to, you know, charge him with being in breach because he'd be in breach of his order made by a judge in Saskatchewan. If it was a federal order, it wouldn't matter where he was. And I don't seem to see this was done in this case. And again, that just highlights to me the problem of using provincial prohibitions to deal with animal offenders.
Yeah, absolutely. This is exactly the type of issue that arises. All right, so moving on to Alberta.
Moving on to more good news, right? Let's go to Alberta, Camille.
Yeah, your home province, Peter. There's always a case in Alberta, it seems.
Here's another problem with animal laws in this country. In this case, what we've got is a really problematic situation with an offender selling his animals at auction, and again, doing so in a terrible way. I mean, assuming these charges haven't been proven yet, but the basis of treating his animals, rabbits, cats, tortoises, birds, it's all sorts of animals that are treated in a very, very poor way. He's an animal breeder. He raises and sells animals and does so, let's assume, in a poor way. And now he's facing charges under the Animal Protection Act.
His name is Ty Marshall, and he's from the Vulcan area of Alberta.
Yeah. It's hard to believe none of these people are zero of the month, Camille. It was a hell of a competition this month. But in any event, so the problem is that these pieces of legislation don't always allow you to do things in the interim. They don't always allow you to essentially seize the animals that are in his care. So the problem that's going on here is there's no order in place to prevent him from keeping other animals. So they seize the animals that are in danger, but that's it.
Yeah, so he's essentially waiting a trial date on provincial charges for causing animals to be in distress. And in the meantime, he's just carrying on his business as usual because there's nothing legal that's preventing him from doing this. And again, Peter, this is a case where if he'd been prosecuted criminally, they could have imposed conditions of release on him that say you can't have any animals. So, you know, you and I both, or I don't anymore, but you practice criminal law and I have. What you see typically in a case, let's say there's a domestic violence case and a man is accused of hitting his wife. The conditions of bail and of his release from custody while he's awaiting his trial are absolutely going to include a prohibition on contact with his wife. he's not going to be able to put her in another position where she could be harmed by him. And that's the kind of thing that we need in animal cruelty cases as well. If you've got somebody who's awaiting a trial on charges of animal cruelty, why would you let them continue to have other animals that might then be at risk?
So for those animal advocates out there, and there are many of them who are of the view that we don't need to change our federal law. The goal of doing things better is to fix our provincial laws and make them tougher and tougher. This is Exhibit A or B or C or D. We've gone through quite a few already for why that's not so. The criminal law has a role to play, and one of the roles it can do is that it can set much harsher conditions for those awaiting trial. And as a result, you can get those animals out of the hands of Ty Marshall, who frankly probably doesn't deserve to have them. And until we can do that, we're going to keep seeing these cases come up again and again and again.
Yeah, criminal charges, that's what we need.
Absolutely.
All right, so now we've got two more neglect cases, as if that wasn't enough. And there's two out of the Maritimes. There's one in Nova Scotia and one in PEI. And we're going to sort of discuss them together because they raise pretty similar issues. So the case out of Nova Scotia, there was a woman who was convicted of animal cruelty for starving her bunny to death. And Peter, again, this is, I believe, actually, I'm not sure if it says whether it's criminal charges or provincial charges, but...
Once again, it looks like, to be honest, it looks provincial, Camille, because it says animal cruelty and failing to ensure the animal has an adequate source of food or water. Well, the language suggests provincial, but who knows?
Yeah, so Amanda Wright is her name, and she was sentenced in March to a 10-year ban on acquiring new animals, which seems good. She pleaded guilty to the charges. But the problem is that, you know, she starved this animal to death and she pleaded guilty, so she's got a 10-year ban. Why wouldn't it be a lifetime ban? So that's issue number one. And then issue number two is that even though there's just a 10-year ban, there's two cats she already owns who are exempt from this ban. So she can keep those cats, despite her having, pleaded guilty to starving an animal to death. So that's pretty disturbing. And the chief inspector of the Nova Scotia SPCA is pretty concerned about this, too. And she says, as part of this news article, that allowing any animals whatsoever to stay in the custody of someone convicted of animal abuse is, quote, certainly not something the Nova Scotia SPCA condones. So they're going to be monitoring her, which I guess is some comfort, but that's really disturbing that she would get to keep any animals at all.
Hard to believe. Just goes to show, again, we are not privy to the facts. We do not know what type of negotiations went on here, but I am deeply concerned because, once again, this is sort of symbolic of the way in which we deal with animals. We treat them as disposable commodities, and we treat them as being of lesser importance than obviously human beings. And I think that the idea that we would just leave them and hope for the best in the care of somebody who has gone so far as to starve an animal to death, I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling that we will then turn around and create an exemption during the 10-year ban. I'm assuming she went in and said, well, I've always treated my cats well, and I miss them, and I love them, and I, you know, perhaps they weren't adoptable out to anybody else, so they were worried that they would have nowhere else to go. And again, we don't have all these facts, but it's deeply disturbing that these things, once we've gone to the level and the difficulty of actually proving that animal cruelty has occurred, why not go the whole nine yards?
Yeah, and this exact same issue comes up in another case from my home province of PEI, where a man pleaded guilty to animal neglect again. And this appears to, actually I'm not totally sure, it sort of looks like it was provincial charges again, but he kept 10 underweight dogs chained up in his barn. He pled guilty to neglect, and he was ordered to pay a fine and of $1,000 and about $2,200 in restitution costs to the Humane Society for the seizure and care of his animals. But what's really disturbing about this case is, that these dogs were found skittish, underweight, and tethered on short chains inside his large barn. And they had poor body conditions, parasites, eye and skin problems, overgrown claws. Five of them had to be euthanized because they were showing no signs of improving and were continuing to suffer mentally, which is just heartbreaking.
I can't even get to the part we need to talk about, Camille. The sentence to me is so outrageous based on the extent of cruelty, the duration that it must have gone on for, and the fact that five animals had to be destroyed as a result of this man's treatment of them, is in and of itself absolutely shocking. Fine and restitution. I don't know what he was charged with. Once again, I'm assuming that it was provincial. The idea that this is neglect and not willful neglect is absolutely stunning to me. These are criminal charges. Given the number of animals, the pain and suffering that it must have gone on for, I have to ask again, what are we doing in our charging structure? It's absolutely shocking.
It's appalling. It's really appalling. And if you, you know, if you look at the photos of these dogs on the CBC News article, and we will post that in the show notes, it's just heartbreaking to think of what they went through. Also, the fact that there were 10 of them sort of suggests to me that it was a breeding operation, because I don't know why you would keep 10 dogs chained up for any other purpose. It doesn't say
absolutely
that in the article.
Absolutely. I don't know anything about, I'm always wary of comparing apples to oranges, or as my colleague likes to say, rotten apples to moldy oranges. But the woman from Kentville, my instinct is that the woman from Kentville who starved an animal, starved a rabbit, not to in any way underplay that, it has got to be a less significant sentence. It just has to be. You're just in terms of the number of victims. The number of victims alone, and the fact that five of them had to be put down because of the way in which they were treated, they were starving, they just didn't die, but they ultimately had to be put down anyway, is deeply, deeply disturbing. And the idea that these would be treated, you know, ending up with a fine of $1,000 is just stunning.
Well, and then, of course, we haven't even gotten to,
oh,
I don't
yeah,
want to
right.
say the worst
well,
part, but another awful part of this case, the one we wanted to talk about, which is the prohibition. He is now subject merely to a 5-year prohibition on owning dogs. And, Peter, guess what? There's an exception. The two dogs that he already has who live in his home, they apparently showed no signs of neglect, so the court is fine with him keeping those two dogs.
5 years, Camille.
Five years. That's it.
Camille, do you know if the Prince Edward Island, do you know what the duration is? Can you impose a maximum? Is there a maximum on the ban that can be imposed under the provincial law?
Oh, I haven't checked recently, but I think the maximum, if not indefinite, is quite high. PEI did just revise its animal protection legislation, and it's quite strong at this point. So I'd be surprised if it wasn't a pretty robust provision.
I am going to look it up, Camille. Gosh darn it. We are not going to leave our listeners, without this knowledge. Because, first of all, the 5 years strikes me as absolutely and utterly outrageous. I mean, I don't know if I'm more outraged by the fine or if I'm more outraged by the 5-year ban. I mean, how many animals does this idiot have to mistreat and starve before we're going to ban him from owning animals for life? The idea that animal ownership is a right and not a privilege is what is just, to me, at the core of all of these problems. And it's just stunning to me. It's just stunning to me that I'm just dying. I wish I had been there to be a fly on the wall at the time when the judge only asked for a 5-year ban. Like, I'm trying to decide who's responsible for this ridiculous decision. I can't blame anybody because I just don't know.
Well, who really knows? I guess it could have been part of a plea bargain if he pled guilty. Maybe that was part of it. Maybe the case wasn't very weak and they thought, or it wasn't very strong and they thought that's all they could get out of it. Who knows? There's so many factors that could go into it, but it's still unacceptable no matter how you cut it.
I have to assume. I mean, frankly, if I were prosecutor on that file, I mean, screw the fine and the restitution. I just want this guy out forever. That would be it. I'd ask, you want to plead guilty? Fine. Well, I will give up our ridiculous condition and instead just, you know, the conviction, like, who cares? And instead, I will just ban you from owning this for life. That's all I really want. Oh, I've gotten to that point, Camille. Hold on. I'm scrolling.
You found the provision in the act?
Jeez, it takes forever. You got a lot to read here.
Well, I mean, while you're looking it up,
I completely agree. It's incredibly long.
I think that one of the things that is most important on getting a conviction for animal cruelty, it's not that, you know, I personally am not a fan of jails for a lot of reasons and putting people in prison. I don't think it's effective for many reasons that I won't go into now. But what I do think is critically important is being able to keep an offender away from animals in the future. And I would, I know prosecutors have told me before that they would give up almost any other sentence just to get that ban in place. Because that's what's going to help you protect animals from future abuse. So the prison sentence wouldn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I can't find it. It seems like the wording of the act is really open-ended. All I can see is that the judge may have, it has the right to make various orders. So I don't see any list. Maybe I'm missing something. I'm not an expert with PEI's legislation, but God, I'm outraged. Absolutely.
Actually,
disgusting.
Peter, I just found it. I just found it.
What section
Okay, so it's section 42, sub 1A, and it says the judge can prohibit the person from owning animals or
including
having possession
for such duration.
Basically, there is an ability to impose a lifetime ban.
You know what, Camille? Who needs a lifetime ban? 5 years. That's good enough. In 5 years, this man... Well, wait a minute. Have we gotten to the point, I'm so angry, that he still got his dogs? Holy crap.
He still has two dogs. It's insane.
Oh, for God's sake, Camille. Camille, I gotta quit. I'm done. I'm done.
Okay,
I'm leaving. I'm leaving the justice system. It's so ridiculous. You could starve and mistreat 10 dogs in your barn. I mean, the amount of suffering those dogs, I want people to understand how long it takes for dogs to get into that condition. The amount of suffering these animals have to go through. And then somewhere, some prosecutor, defense lawyer, and judge get together and decide 5 years is an adequate amount before we'll let this guy get his hands on more dogs. And in the interim, these two are doing fine. Keep them. Jesus.
Yeah, what else can we say, Peter? I feel like that's a good note to end this segment on.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to end because I'm gonna lose it. All right, that is the good news and the bad news from the world of animal law. And frankly, it was a good mix of both. We should talk about the horse case again. I'll get in a better mood. You should have ended with that one.
Yeah, seriously.
Heroes and Zeros.
All right, now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, Heroes and Zeros.
Everybody's favorite segment, $5 if you repeat that to me at the gala.
Yeah, pay attention.
There you go.
All right, Peter, so our zero today, this one is so entertaining to me. So our zero of the week is MP Robert Sopuck. So Mr. Sopuck,
Camille, did you say... I thought he was our hero. Did I get this wrong? I thought Robert Sopuck was our hero for this video. I thought this video was the funniest thing I've ever seen and some wonderful satire. So I was about to give Robert Sopuck our hero of the month. Did I get that wrong?
I think you did. That's really generous of you. But once we explain to listeners what was in the video, I think you might understand why it gets the zero award instead.
Maybe I missed the point of the video because it was hilarious, Camille. I laughed long and I laughed hard.
Okay, we're going to post a link in the show notes. But briefly, this is a video created by a member of parliament. He's from Winnipeg. He's a conservative. And the video promotes eating beef for environmental reasons. So the whole point of it is he's telling people that if they want to be environmentalists, they should eat Canadian beef.
Oh, my God. Bob, you are so funny.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it was so well done, Camille. I swore he was serious.
Well, yeah, it really did make me bust a gut. So this video actually first came out back in January, so it's been around for a little while. But the reason we're giving it the zero this week is it was just posted on the Conservative Party's YouTube channel on May 6th. So we're just gonna play a couple of quotes from this video so you can see how hilarious it is.
If you care about the environment, eat Canadian beef. Extensive beef production in ranch country is an agricultural system that promotes animal welfare, landscape conservation, and wildlife habitat protection. I know it's a message you haven't heard before, but it's absolutely true. Critics of beef consumption ignore the landscape conservation benefits of extensive cattle production. Some critics say we should bypass meat altogether and directly consume vegetables and grains. Well, from an environmental perspective, they're wrong. They're wrong because cattle convert a non-human food, grass and forages, to a human food, beef. A purely plant-based diet encourages the cultivation of fragile grasslands and would also require vastly greater inputs. As for the argument that red meat is bad for you, well, I take the view that if you give up fat, sugar, and alcohol, you may not live longer. It will just seem that way.
Bob, you're so funny. I love him. I swear to God, if Bob Sofuck decided to do a comedy routine, I would spend a lot of money on that.
It's almost hard to even know what to say about this, because the idea that feeding cows food and then slaughtering them for beef is somehow good for the environment is just so nonsensical and so at odds with all of the evidence. I looked up a few stats, Peter. When you compare beef to staples like potatoes, wheat, and rice, the impact of beef per calorie is about 160 times more land and 11 times more greenhouse gas emissions. And that's a study from the Journal of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
Yeah, well, I thought Bob Sopuck was funny when he was, you know, fighting against Bill C-246 and spewing out so much nonsense. I did a whole video debunking Bob. I mean, you could do another video debunking this video. It's so funny. Like, it's so ludicrous that he's able to make these arguments and still get elected to parliament.
Yeah, it really is. You know, even grass-fed beef is still bad because cows emit extreme amounts of methane. And of course, rainforest deforestation, a leading cause of that is to produce grazing land for cows. And as you alluded to, Peter, Robert Sopuck has been one of the lead opponents of doing anything for animals in this parliament. He's very, very strongly against so-called animal rights, extremists, as he calls us. And he did everything he could to block Nathaniel Erskine-Smith's animal cruelty bill, Bill C-246. And he's involved in the conservative or the all-party outdoor caucus, which is very focused on shooting down animal protection legislation, too. So not really a surprise that he would produce this video, but I do appreciate the laughs.
Yeah, it was very funny, and I should just say the over-under for when we were going to get to Bob Sopuck as a zero of the month was 11, so we got in just under the wire, I'm happy to say. It only took 9 episodes to get to Bob Sopuck. Wow. I commend that video to everyone. Go and watch it. It's hilarious. I love, did you notice, Camille, he sticks in animal welfare at the beginning? How great we are at animal welfare. He's hilarious. I gotta love him. He's funny. Okay, let's go to our hero of the month. Much, much better. And this one is very recent and involves animal justice. I'm going to throw it to you, Camille. Our hero of the month is a related group, our friends at Eco Justice.
Yay for EcoJustice! So we had a pretty big win with the assistance of EcoJustice just this week. You may remember that last October, Animal Justice was represented by EcoJustice in a lawsuit that we filed against the province of Ontario. And the point of the lawsuit is that Ontario has all these obligations to do things to protect animals that are threatened or endangered so that they don't go extinct. And one of those things is that they're supposed to produce these recovery strategies for species that are named as threatened or endangered. And we were concerned, and so was EcoJustice, that a bunch of these recovery strategies hadn't been posted when they were supposed to. So we tried to meet with the minister, that didn't really go anywhere, and we eventually just filed a lawsuit against them. So we were represented by the great legal team at EcoJustice. And shout out to Amir Adaran and Josh Ginsburg for their amazing representation on this case. But the reason that EcoJustice is our hero this week is that that lawsuit that we filed has just settled. So we signed a settlement agreement with the province of Ontario, and we put out a joint press statement with them. And as part of the settlement agreement, the province is going to start providing public updates on their progress in making these recovery strategies for 37 species named in our suit, including the mountain lion, the northern bobwhite, which is a bird, and a very large fish named the black red horse, and a bunch of other species too. So I thought this was pretty cool, Peter. It was actually our first lawsuit that Animal Justice has ever filed on our own. That's not an intervention type thing where we get involved in an existing case.
Great news, Camille. Fantastic. Really happy to hear it, and a very deserving hero.
Yeah, and you know, just so people understand what our sort of interest is in species issues, we are obviously in the midst of a global extinction crisis of epic proportions caused by human activities, climate change, deforestation, land loss, pollution. And funny enough, the leading cause of wild animal extinction is the confinement and slaughter of domesticated animals, because industrial farming contributes huge amounts of greenhouse gases, which change our climate. It causes a lot of pollution and deforestation. So we see these issues as interrelated, and while we tackle the meat problem and the animal welfare issues that come with farming, we also want to make sure we're tackling endangered species issues and protecting wild populations from going extinct.
Absolutely. It's definitely, they're very linked to what we do, and it's really great to see this sort of stuff go forward. Again, very deserving Hero of the Month this month.
Thank you to our friends at EcoJustice.
All right. We the Q&A that we had for this week were all answered, believe it or not. We had questions this week that asked us to focus on the Animal Legal Defense Fund case, and we had another question asking us to touch on the case from Vernon. So we have dealt with those questions, and we're always looking forward to more questions. If you have them, send them our way.
It's been a fun time, Peter. Enjoyed this episode a lot. Looking forward to talking to you all again soon.
Me too. Now, Camille, I should point out I will not be here for our next episode. Don't be afraid, listeners. I am working on some things that are in need of my attention. So I'll be taking a break, and I will be back right before the Animal Justice Gala. Really excited to talk about the 10 years of animal justice. That's going to be our subject of our podcast 4 weeks from now. And I understand, Camille, you are trying to plan something special in my absence 2 weeks from now.
I'm anticipating a pretty fun guest appearance from a co-host who is as yet unnamed, but you guys will find out next week.
Fantastic. Talk to you soon, Camille.
Bye.
We'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Please, a reminder, you can subscribe to the Paw & Order podcast using iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcatcher. And please, please leave us a rating and a review, which helps us reach more people.
You can also share the podcast so that others have the opportunity to listen to it. And we always welcome donations to Animal Justice, which makes Paw & Order possible.
You can find me on Twitter at Peter Sankoff, on Facebook at Professor Sankoff, and at my website, petersankoff.com.
And you can find me online on Twitter at Camille Labchuk, same handle on Instagram. And we always enjoy Twitter conversations about the show or any other animal law or political topics. And finally, thank you so much to our producer, Shannon Milling.
See you next time on Order.